Hello and welcome everyone to the Traction Stage podcast. Traction is what every founder in an early stage startup is looking for. It is the clear evidence that the market wants your product or service, and it's when things start getting bigger and better. I'm Alexandre Azevedo, and as your host, I'll interview startup entrepreneurs from all over the world to better understand which were the elements they've counted on and the challenges they faced before finding traction for their businesses. In today's episode, I'll interview Abolor Salami, founder of Ribe Finance. Hello, Abolor. Thanks a lot for being with us today. It's awesome having you with in the Traction Stage podcast. You're the very first African startup that is talking with us. And how are you? How's everything going?
Hi, Alex. Thank you very much. I'm doing very well. Lagos is fine. The weather is great.
So start by telling us a little bit about the problem that Ribe is solving today, the problem that you have noticed, and what kind of solution does Ribe offer to its customers and to people in general?
Thank you again, Alex. So primarily, we have found three problems, or let me say two problems, as fundamental to our users. And number one of that is they already do a lot of work, a lot of hard work, but they don't make enough income. So the first problem that we want to try to solve is being part of a system that ensures that people have a livable income. The second problem is people are working really hard and they work for several years and they don't have any significant savings that is controlled by them outside of pensions and other things like that, which, as we're finding out now, are not very sufficient. So how do we make sure that when people have worked for several years in their life, even be it on desirable, livable income, they have put enough money aside to be wealthy, to be rich, to live comfortably even after they stopped working and while they were working to enjoy a good life? So those are the two big fundamental problems we're trying to solve. Owning a home, for example, is a huge life achievement from a financial standpoint. So that's the third element that we think that is important for people to solve. So those are the three key problems that we have identified and we say we want to be a part of solving for people.
Okay, so let me understand a little bit further. The first one refers to you've mentioned about
Livable income.
Livable income, yes. The second one refers to their savings and their maybe retirement plans, something related like that.
Yes, both their savings while they are working and when they've stopped working. So having an enjoyable life, being wealthy, right? So saving and investing their funds to create a wealthy life.
Perfect, perfect. And what kind of solution does Ribe offer to solve these three main problems that you have observed?
So for us, the three problems, there are two key things that need to be solved. And these things already exist for decades, right? It's a better banking system, and not necessarily the banks as you know it today, but a better banking system. This is everything from savings to credit to investment. And number two, a better wealth creation system.
When you say better banking, is this better? Why do you mention better than what?
I'll explain. So let me mention the two things and then I'll explain. So the first, a better banking system or a better financial system generally. And then the second thing is a better way to make money, a better way to create wealth, a better way to earn income. Now, in terms of the first, actually, let me take the second one first, which is a better way to make an income. People today there's not just enough wealth creation, especially here in Africa, here in Nigeria. A lot of people are working hard, but the income they are making are not livable wages. They're not livable income, right? So we want to get involved in ways for people to get better jobs, better businesses, business support programs, credits to their businesses. For people that don't have a way to get a job, create jobs for them by working with the right, by working in the right system. And I'll explain the system to you shortly. The second is now the better financial service system or better
way for people to manage the money when they make the money. Now, the easiest way to explain this is to now tell you what we do, which is we do digital banking for cooperatives. We search for any system around the world that solves this problem that is not controlled by government or controlled by a large corporate. And we found only one system. In the US, it's called credit union. Here in Nigeria and several parts of Africa, they're called cooperatives or SACOs. And what we found is that these groups constantly, the cooperatives are created by several people coming together. You find them in several parts of Europe as well. Say farmers or people working in the same company or market women coming together in a group and creating their own bank, as it were. So what they do is save their funds together. They lend money to one another. They support their own businesses. And they do other things like build homes for themselves. Now, this is the system that we've identified with and that we think we want to help scale. We want to help bring into the digital age and to modernize. So our solution is a digital banking platform or a digital platform that enhances the ability of cooperatives to be formed and to be prosperous. Because we think that when cooperatives are created and when they are successful, they create better living income for people and they allow people to create wealth better than the current systems that we know today.
Perfect, perfect. That's clear. Let me ask you, what was your background when you thought about, or what is your background, and what knowledge and skills do you have?
Before now, I used to work in, a payment company, in a payment services company for the power sector. I was the vice president for the power business at Venture Garden Group. The idea started way before my last job. So I was on my last job for about 4 years, just over 3 years, almost going to 4 years. Now, before that, I was the head of business development for a filmmaking and training institute, which was called Del York. And we ran a training program in partnership with the New York Film Academy in the US. And we ran our programs here in Nigeria and for Africans generally. So while I was on my job, I mean, I was earning salary like everybody else, but I knew I wasn't going to be rich. And my concern was not me just getting rich. My concern was, if this is the way, you know, millions of people live, there's no hope of people actually getting wealthy. Like, this problem is going to continue. There was no structured way for people to plan how to save, people to plan a lifetime of income and a lifetime of, you know, financial success. So I said, I wanted to build a system where we can solve that problem predictably and sustainably. And that's where this started from. My background, originally education, I have my BSc in microbiology and I have an MBA in finance. So my background has pretty much been not necessarily related to this. I haven't worked in a bank before, nor was I running a cooperative before this.
Yeah, and the idea came from this understanding that people needed a better thing or better ways of making money and managing and a better banking system, as you told us. And how old were you at the time? I mean, it was in May 2016 that you've built Rebe Finance, right?
Yes, we launched May 2016, but the original idea started December of 2012. And we did some research, did some product testing for about 2-3 years before we finally settled with what we wanted to do very clearly. And we launched the business in May of 2016.
Okay, you've mentioned 2012, right?
December 2012. That was when the original idea started. Then 2013, 2014, 2015, we did some research, some product testing. And then May 2016, we launched.
Okay, and how old were you at that time in 2012?
I'll have to calculate that. I think I was about 26 or so.
26 something?
17, 18. Yeah, I'm going to be 32 now, so.
Okay. But and from that moment, 2012, let's take that date, December 2012, you've noticed that need in the market or the problem in the market, and you had the idea, and of course, it took approximately 4 years, so you can really launch Rebe Finance. and I'm very interested about this period. What were your first steps since 2012, December 2012? What were the first steps that you've taken, and what kind of things did you do?
Well, the first was, my friend and I back then, we started together, even though he left eventually. But the idea was to first document everything. Like, we started writing our plans. We sketched what we think would be the platform. We're still doing a lot of research then. So we're doing just product ideas, sketch it on paper. I got another friend of ours to build a web platform that is pretty simple. We did that in about 3 months. This was early 2013. Then we got into an accelerator program in about May of 2013. And between May, June, that program started. The program was called Garden Institute of Business and Entrepreneurship. It's like an incubator program pre-incubation. And we ran on for about 3-4 months. And at the end of the program, we had not launched. We're still doing a lot of research about our idea, but we were able to have built out the product at this time. 2013 had gone. We still hadn't launched because we just wanted to make sure we had it very clear before we launched. And, it wasn't something that was just going to, we're just going to flame and it's going to die off. And because I had experience running a business and I wasn't just going to start something that eventually I wasn't convinced was going to run.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of research did you do?
So it was mostly desk research and consumer preference testing. So we actually did a product-based research. So we launched a product. We tried to get people to use it, see the kind of difficulties they had, see if it would work or not, and things like that. That was the kind of research we did. So it wasn't like a structured academic research, as it were.
Yeah, and this product, if I understood correctly, you did a product or maybe a prototype, I don't know, but you did something that people could use or test or interact with. And what was this first version, or maybe this first prototype that you did? It was something that had to be coded or not? Yes. It was maybe like a mock-up or a sketch.
Yeah, so it was coded. You could interact with it. You go online. So it allowed you to do two major things. Number one is to set a goal. And number two is to save towards that goal. All we were doing was monitoring how you were doing on your goal. So, back then, there were no APIs to do any direct debit. You couldn't process money for people, as it were. So we couldn't really help people to save, but we could ask them to upload their bank statement and we could check if they're saving towards their goals. Of course, it was inefficient and we scrapped it in 2014, which at the time, the company I did the incubator with wanted to launch a product. And from my experience, having worked for about 7 years at the time, we had gotten to know each other pretty well and they asked me to help them run the business, which I did for 3.5 years before I then went back to UB to start the company full time. All this while, of course, the company being a potential investor at the time and now an investor in the company, we're also part of the research we continue to do.
And when you do that, or when you did that very first version, that it was coded, and if I understood that part too, you were trying or you were testing that with end users, right? Because today, at the present moment, Ribi Finance is marketing as a B2B company for cooperatives or for small financial institutions. But at that time, this prototype you were doing, trying to see or focusing that prototype on the people that were going to use the system. Is that correct?
Correct. We had both mock-ups and working prototypes.
Okay, you have mock-ups and working prototypes. And how did you fund this work? I'm very interested to know about the human resources or maybe the skills that were needed to do that coded prototype in that time. Does that come from the accelerator you were partnering with?
I mean, essentially, I was funding it. I mean, I had, so, I mean, as a little bit of background, I had done consulting a bit. So I used to write business plans and things like that. So I had a way of making income on the side. I mean, significant income on the side. So, and then I took the job with the company. So I was making significant income actually. And I used that income to fund the business. So I paid developers, you know, my partner does the drawings and the mockups, but the development, I paid another friend of ours to build it. And when it was time, I employed two interns and they were running the business full time while I was working part time and working with them part time 2 days a week. And again, the income from my work, I used to fund the business.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And in this time that you were testing the prototype, the working prototype, what kind of reactions or what kind of validation did you have? Because it took from December 2012 until May 2016 when you really launched the platform. In this time, you were testing things. You have mentioned that you tested a lot and you would like to be very sure about what you were doing. When did you realize that the product or the platform was really something that was worth to put all your efforts, money, etc. on it? When did you find the validation for the business?
So there were two critical things. The first was back during the accelerator program. I got a lot of advice and a lot of learning from the founders of the accelerator, Bumi and Bumi Akinyemiju and Kumi Demore. And more importantly, there was one of our mentors during the mentor sessions of his open hours. There was a Professor Soji Adelaja, who was part of that, who was one of the mentors. And Prof told me one thing. He said, "Salami, you're trying to help poor people. I didn't see it as poor people see the issue, but that's how he saw it." He said, "So you need to find a strong partner who is also interested in this vision and this mission, because you will need a lot of resources and you might not be able to afford it from the beginning." And I kept that close to my chest. And in 20, you know, while we were still doing the research and doing all the preparations, in 2015, 2016, the new, a few things came up and the Bank of Industry here in Nigeria said, "Hey, we want to lend money to cooperatives." And we had a platform. They didn't have a platform. We said, "Hey, this is our opportunity. We want cooperatives to use our platform. You want to lend to cooperatives? Okay, we'll give you our platform so that the cooperatives can use our platform to access the credit." And that was how we were able to launch. And that gave us the opportunity, the right timing to be able to, number one, be able to get the cooperative that would love to use our platform. That will have cost us a lot of money to do, but we were able to get it because they were definitely going to be attracted to the credit. And number two, we were able to sell our platform B2B to a potential customer who helped us make our initial income to start the business.
So we started from a financial institution to get the cooperatives that you were aiming to. And yes. and those cooperatives have end users or have the people that are interested in using that too, right? Or the people that correct. You were originally interested about.
Correct. The cooperatives are our real customers. The members of the cooperatives are our real target. They are the people mm-hmm. that are already looking to achieve financial success. And that's the reason they joined the cooperatives in the first place. So those are our real target. If we're able to help 1 million of those people become financially successful, have a better income source, save for a lifetime, own a home, then we'll be successful. So yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing part of the impact that Revi Finance can have on millions of people and really, really help them on achieving financial success and their financial or long-term financial goals too. And I'm really curious about the more people that you want to impact or reach, I'm thinking about the technology difficulties too, because many of these people and please correct me if my understanding is not as accurate as I think, but many of those people are not really familiar with technology, or maybe there isn't a technology availability for them. Do you face such difficulties on these target users?
Yes, we do, actually. It's one of our big considerations. So our customers and us, frankly, technology is not the priority. Technology is like the car. We are trying to get from point A to point B, but we found that, you know, the car can get us there faster. If we don't have a car, we will use the bicycle, or we will use a motorcycle, or maybe if we get lucky, we'll have a plane and we'll fly a plane to get from point A to point B. So technology is just a tool. And what we've done is that we've innovated around it. So for a customer that cannot interact with the technology, someone called an agent, in Nigeria, they're called banking agents, will operate the technology on their behalf. Because at the end of the day, it's not interacting with the technology that is the goal, it's achieving financial stability that is the goal. Mm-hmm. So we have web, we have mobile, we have agents, which are people that operate technology on behalf of end users. And more importantly, there's something that is growing very powerfully across Africa, and it's called USSD. So that's Unstructured Supplementary Service Data, I think. And the core of USSD is like using short codes and SMS on your mobile phone without an internet to access services that originally you would need internet for. For example, I can do a bank transfer using a short code, say, for example, *966*10,000 naira* the account number #. I dial that on my phone like I'm dialing a phone number. I put in my password. In two steps, the money goes from my account, which is linked to my mobile phone, to someone else's account. Now, that is done without the internet and completely replaces the function that a mobile app would have performed.
Yeah, that's clear. And it's awesome. It's an alternative and a totally viable alternative for people that are not or doesn't or don't have that access. And it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. And how did you build? I'm thinking here about the marketing strategies, and I have asked a lot about these questions for other startup founders. And how did you do the marketing? Because I understood that you started everything, or you started dealing with cooperatives when you started talking with one financial institution. That was a door for you. But how did you execute the strategy of getting financial institutions, cooperatives, USSDs, as you've mentioned, and the end users too? How did you make things happen, or how did you get traction or people coming from your platform?
So they've been. I think there's been three ways that we've seen customers, that we've acquired customers so far. The first has been sort of our affiliations, right? Okay, let me put it this way. There are two types of customers. There's enterprise customers and there's retail customers. Enterprise customers are directly acquired. Like you make a phone call, you talk to someone you know, someone does you an introduction. Or you just walk into their office and say, hey, this is what we're offering. This is what we think is of value to you and would like to be your partner or your vendor or, you know, any other thing that is of interest to both parties, right? And, I mean, I've done that for 8 years before Ribi. So I've had some experience with B2B marketing or B2B sales. And that came a bit more naturally than retail. And so far, we have now about 25 corporate partners overall, partners and clients on the enterprise side. Now, the retail is a bit more difficult and is a bit tricky, and that's why we started with enterprise. For retail, we get some of our key partnerships are designed to give us distribution to retail customers. So, for example, banks have a lot of cooperatives that are their customers, but they don't have a platform for those cooperatives. So we partner with the banks, give them our platform so that we can both share that customer. And we both make incremental income while the customer becomes better served. So that's been one of our channels for acquisition. Another is, for example, we do activation programs. So we have a sales team. They go into markets. They go into companies. They go into clusters of people, and we pitch our products. Usually, we prefer to have a inch point. For example, we're launching a cooperative. We're working with a community in the next few weeks to launch a cooperative for that community. What we did is just to go to be the head of that community. Mm-hmm. And with that head, it can gather everybody in that community or the key people in that community, and we can acquire that entire community onto their cooperative. The same thing in the company, we go to meet the head of HR, the head of human resources or people operations in the company, or the head of the cooperative, you know, via introduction. So, I mean, those are the key. And then sometimes we get a lot of inbound. So from media, press mentions, say, for example, when you publish this, people go to our website and they feel their interest to want to set up a cooperative, and we set them up. So we get that direct engagement that is done by us. We get the partner engagement as a channel of distribution. We do marketing and customer engagement, and sometimes we get inbound requests.
Okay, excellent. So you have mainly a B2B approach, and of course you have this retail kind of approach too that generates inbound marketing too. Great, excellent. And finally, Abelor, I would love to hear what piece of advice would you give to startup entrepreneurs that are dealing with or are trying to do or trying to build their startups around fintech and around and trying to reach or to impact people that are poor, as you've mentioned, or that live in rural areas and that have not a lot of access to technology, and not technology exactly, but maybe financial resources and financial planning. What kind of advice would you give them?
For me, the two key things are, number one, your goal should, in financial services and in this new age, we shouldn't just think about financial services as a way to make money, but rather as a way to create a better society, as a way to make people better secure in their lives. So if you have that core fundamental belief on creating a better society, you will not stop, because that's what we all do every day. And you need that grit, you need that dexterity, you need that ability to stick with it. And that is very important, right? I heard somebody say today, they were part of the acceleration program at Standard Chartered, and he said, number one rule is do not stop, right? Don't quit, don't stop, right? So that's the first thing I would say. Be sure about the goal you're trying to achieve. And again, me being biased, be sure that it's for benefit of the people. Then number two, stick with it. Like, put all you can to it. It doesn't matter that you can start now or you can't start now. Do whatever it is you can do. Start a business get a job. Do a part-time job somewhere. Consult for another company. Be an entrepreneur in residence for a year or 2 years. Save up enough income. Start somewhere and just get going as slowly as you can. Forget all the hype. Like, you don't have to be successful from day one or from year one or from year two. Of course, you know, nobody expects you to run, you know, not unsuccessfully for 10 years before quitting, but give it your best shot and just be sure about what you want to do and believe in it. And number three is, if it's not making money, I don't know about San Francisco, but in many other parts of the world, if you're not making money and you're just throwing capital at it, you might not be Amazon, right? Just be very careful to make sure that the business is one that can be profitable. Otherwise, you're wasting everybody's time and you're wasting precious resources that could be put to use in something else. Except you say it's a research, right? So research is good. I mean, I think those are the three core things that I'd say in terms of be sure of what you want to do. Number two, be sure you can be profitable in the business. And number three, be sure you're helping people and stick to it, because helping people doesn't have a limit of time.
Excellent. Great advice. And thanks a lot for sharing the story of Ribi Finance. I would love to see more entrepreneurs tackling such problems and trying to get things better for people who need it, and trying to make a better world too. Thanks a lot, Abelor. Thanks for your time and for sharing Ribis Starif with us today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's been a pleasure to be on the program.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Alex.
And how about you? Did you like this episode? Please visit us at thetractionstage.com and leave your comment. There you will find all the episode's show notes, as well as additional information about the founders and their startups. I'll wait for you there. Bye-bye.